Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
We stared at a Potemkin village, veiling the dystopian NFL as we listened to 64 disembodied voices cheering on the black and gold to its first home victory of the 2020 season. Welcome to the Steelers Outpost podcast, a proud member of the Armchair All-Americans Network. It is September 21st, 2020. This is Tom coming to you from the Sawdust Studios in the Washington, D.C. Outpost, and Nick joins me from the West Coast Outpost. Where are you?
I'm out here in Los Angeles getting some business done, but of course some of that business was sidetracked by a heart-palpitating type game that the Steelers took care of in beautiful fanless Heinz Field yesterday.
Well, speaking of beautiful, I'll bet it's beautiful out where you are right now.
You're correct. So I really hope that you actually made good on that bet and put some money down. And I hope that you made that bet on betonline.ag because there's no shortage of action going on with our partners at betonline.ag. They've got the best lines. They've got the best odds. And you can bet on the Steelers continuing their win streak to start this season. They also got simulated NFL, NBA, and UFC happening every day for our devout gamblers to check out. They also got live casino games, poker tournaments, and the best props in the business. Maybe we can bet on some of Juju celebrations. Visit betonline.ag on your computer or mobile device and join now to receive your welcome bonus. BetOnline.ag, your online wagering experts. The Steelmen and what they got done yesterday. What are your overall first impressions from the game from yesterday against the Broncos? Feeling positive, negative, neutral?
Well, I'm glad I slept on it, because if you asked me after the game, it was just irritation and frustration that we didn't beat up on a beat-up team. But having slept on it, a win's a win. Style points don't count. I think we have to listen to our own pontification after one of these victories, because every game's a coin flipped in the NFL.
Yeah, and I agree to an extent a win is a win, but they're really not, because what you really want to do is extrapolate what the team looks like, and you have to take into account what other teams are looking like, particularly in this COVID truncated offseason type of year. You also have to look at the Steelers' history. You have to look what they're dealing with. And so you don't rate all wins and losses the same, right? Like even the Patriots had a big loss to the Seahawks last night, which there were some encouraging things about it for them. Like the fact, okay, they lost to Russell Wilson, who's a football D point, but it turns out Cam Newton can throw the ball down the field. So that bodes well for them. The Steelers win, I'm pretty thoroughly happy with it, to be honest with you. Was it sloppy? Should they have won by 20? Of course. Yeah, they should have beat the Giants by 20. The Steelers looked like they were going to get that done in the first half, and they had a second half let up. But here's what I think. There's no preseason. The Steelers start slowly regardless. They lose this game every year. Within the first four games, they lose to a basement-dwelling team, which is what Denver will be if they can't get these guys back, right, their injuries back. They lose to a backup quarterback and usually don't get the job done there. Well, they got it done this year. Look at what the Steelers are working with. Not a new quarterback, but a guy who hasn't played in a year. And now he's coming back to receiving core where, yeah, he sort of knows some of the guys. But Ebron, Juju, Deontay being the focal point of the offense in Washington, this is a new core. So there's not a lot of gelling there. It's a new offensive line at this point. The entire right side of the offensive line is new. So we knew from the beginning that there's going to need to be some gelling for those guys. What I saw from the offensive side of the ball is that the players are trending upwards. The performances are looking good. there was sloppy elements to the play calling and to some of the fumbles and to some of the just lack of detail orientation in terms of, you know, screen game or things like that or whatever it is. But that to me speaks more to like team football and gelling. What I saw from Ben was significantly better than what the first game. I mean, just the pass downfield to Ebron alone or to Claypool alone, I've watched 17,000 times because, ladies and gentlemen, it's happening. It's happening again. Claypool is happening. But Ben pushed the ball downfield. When Fietner let him let loose, he throwing the ball 20 yards at a time instead of just all these little tunnel screens. We saw that Deontay Johnson giveth and he taketh away. When he giveth to the other team. When he taketh away, he takes their souls by some of the best plays we've seen by a skill position player in the NFL this year. And he had like four in one game when you're talking about the Broncos. Obviously, Connor had a good game. We thought that he'd be out for the game. So Dotson, holy crap, for a first start, he played well. So if you look all around, and we'll talk more about the rest of the players later, but I liked what all of the players did. And to win, even when you're sloppy that way, to me is what the Steelers have to do early season. If they played the Chiefs or the Ravens right now, yeah, they'd be in trouble. But guess what? They lucked out with the schedule and they get a chance to get their sea legs under them. So that's how I feel about the victory. I'm happy that they got out of the stadium with the victory.
For sure. I think if you asked me the theme of the game before today, I would have said I would have said the defensive effort, the line edge rushers and linebackers. If they hadn't have lost steam in the second half or Denver figured out the defense. But when I reflect on it a little more, I think it's the offensive line. I mean, that was our question mark, right? I mean, maybe running back was a question in some people's mind with the assumption that Benny Snell was going to play more. That turned out not to be the case. It was the offensive line. You mentioned Dotson. His name wasn't called at all. As a matter of fact, Pro Football Focus voted, said that he didn't allow a single pressure on 42 pass blocking snaps. That was huge. You had, I think the only like obvious miscue I could see, and I looked at every running play a couple of times, was Filer missed a block one time, but generally the offensive line held up really well. Ben was not pressured. His miscues were either his own or a misdirection on the route running.
Yeah, I agree. And that's really impressive. And it just begs the question, is Munchak a double agent? Was Munchak coaching up Chooks and Dotson from the other side of the sidelines? Who knows? Maybe Surrett really has ascended that way. But I don't put any stock fact that the Steelers are beating up on lesser teams right now, just because, like I said, the Steelers have a lot of moving parts. And I think by the time they play the Ravens in week six or whatever it is, they will have gotten some of these things together. So let's talk about the defense. Like you're saying, I guess I opened the show by talking about the offense because it just feels like the defense is a given right now. I mean, it's insane how fast they are. They're going to overwhelm every team except for the Chiefs and the Ravens. And then when they have some, once in a while, you'll have just a bad week or some team will get really hot. But there's just no team that can deal with the type of speed. Like, oh, let's run away from TJ, right into Bud Dupree, you know, Minka, Hayden in the back end making some plays, but especially that front seven, even Bush and Vince Williams were getting in there a lot on the defensive side. Mike Hilton probably had the game of his life, but they're getting a little bit smarter with Mike Hilton's blitzes, more judicial again, rather than last year when they just blitzed him every play from the same formation and people realized, oh yeah, they like to blitz this guy. So they picked him up. So I guess my thing with the defense is, it's absurd. I mean, it's just a matter of time before the dam breaks on almost any offense with them. And then to address your point about the second half, about how they started letting up yards, I think that a lot of that goes back to what I'm saying about team defense. There's a lot giving up yards points right now. In every game, look what happened with the Seahawks and the Patriots. That stuff, I think, will improve as they get more real game communication sort of experience. There's actually a sideline clip picked up quick from against the Giants where I don't know if it was Slayton or one of the Giants receivers was talking some smack with his fellow Giants on the sideline about like the Steelers, like they're quiet out there. They're quiet talking about the defense. And then NFL Films did a really good job of flipping the camera to Tomlin yelling at the defense, like you're silent out there. You need to talk. And then they got better with it as the game went along. We talked about how all these reps, they need preseason games, communication that goes on there. Same thing is true of the secondary. So if I extrapolate from this game, the biggest problems I had seem like things that can get better with experience. So that's a positive.
So if I could just line up a couple of these defensive statistics, Steelers, 7 sacks to 1 for Denver. Tackles for losses, 11 for the Steelers, 6 for Denver. Quarterback hits, Denver had 3 quarterback hits. The Steelers had 19. I had no idea of that number.
Jeez.
Yeah, so if we're watching
the first play of the game. Oh, sorry.
No, if you're watching the first half, you're just assuming we're going to sack. We're going to get a sack on every play. I mean, TJ wasn't the only. Yeah, I mean, we were in the back the whole time. And when Driscoll came in, I mean, it had to be an education. I mean, eventually they figured it out. Like I said, in the second half, he seemed to be pretty comfortable in the pocket. I mean, it's not that he was getting no pressure, but he was definitely getting his feet planted. But the first half was a tsunami.
It was. And apologies to you guys out there listening. Once again, we're sort of pirate radioing this thing. Our Zoom has a little bit of a lag there. So sorry if it sounds like my words are coming in a little bit late. I think part of the big reason why the defense started giving up yards in the second half, besides the fact that, yeah, they still needed to tune up things too, is because of Randy Feitner. And it's because of the play calling and how the Steelers have a tendency to get incredibly conservative when they should really just go for the jugular. I think our buddy Derek the Kid put out a tweet earlier that I had ended up retweeting that showed the play calling after the Claypool TD. So look at the play calling here. After the Claypool touchdown, it should have broken the game wide open. First and 10 is a run for 2 yards. And 2nd and 8 is another run and a penalty. And it's 3rd and 18, they pass for 9 yards, then they punt. Next drive is a pass for 6 yards, followed by 2 runs for a grand total of 2 yards. They punt again. Next drive, run on first down again, pass for 9, run for negative yardage again, lose yardage on a screen. 3rd and 16, they go for the first down, which is my most annoying thing ever. Look at this third drive. First down is a run for -2. Okay, so that's 2nd and 12. What are we going to do here, Randy? We're definitely going to run the ball, aren't we? So he throws a screen, a receiver run. Dumb. So it's -4. Now we're 3rd and 16. Okay, so if you decided on 2nd and 12 that you're not going to try and pick up the first down, you shouldn't try to pick it up on 3rd and 16. I'm going to be pissed if you do that, because I think on 2nd and 12, back in the Todd Haley days, at least, you still pass the ball forward and you can pick up the first down. But if you're going to be hyper conservative, your strategy doesn't even make sense. You're going to throw a screen on 2nd and 12. You're going to lose yards. Okay, the next play that you call right now should be a draw, because you've basically surrendered already. Nope. You decide to try and throw the ball downfield on 3rd and 16 when everybody knows that you're going to, like, they just don't have to let up a big play. Which I always say to you, Dad, when we're watching these games, watch out. This is an interception situation, because everybody knows they just have to protect 16 yards down the field. So Ben throws a pick. And so if you're wondering why Denver hung around, quote from Derek right there, that's a big reason that the play calling needs to help the defense, because when Randy has let Ben throw, we've seen it for 2 games in a row, with the 2-minute drill in the Giants game and with some of the drives at the end here of the Denver game, they can make things happen. I understand being conservative with Ben, especially with how he looked in the first half of the Giants game. But I think that the touchdown to Claypool, and maybe even more impressive, was where he broke the pocket to the right and hit Deontay on that touchdown pass, a little bit behind Deontay. But we've seen 100 of those touchdown passes from Ben over the years. Oh, Ben breaks the pocket to the right, it's touchdown time, right? So I think Ben is starting to get the rust off. You need to let the peacock fly, okay? The conservative thing is going to make it very difficult on the defense to hold the team, like to have a defensive drive. Your offense goes 3 and out. Go back on the field. 10-play drive, whatever. Offense goes back on the field. 3 and out. See what I'm saying?
Yeah, I used to give them the benefit of the doubt because I don't have the hubris to think I know what's going on or what's best for the team. I always figured there was some issue that led to him calling those, you know, run plays on second and nine. But now that I see there's not a weakness on offense, there's clearly no lack of receivers, especially since you brought Ebron in. Now you've also proven your offensive line beyond it didn't take the entire game to realize, okay, offensive line is solid. We can do whatever we want here. And obviously you have an arsenal of receivers. So that play calling really doesn't make sense in light of the personnel we now have on offense.
I agree. I think that last year you can make the argument that they wanted to be conservative on second long because you have Duck and Mason who... Like, listen, I know it's ridiculous that we harp on these guys so much, but I think you need to have some perspective on how bad these guys were. And yes, they did not have a lot of run them. They had a ton of injuries, no Connor, you know, so on and so forth. But it really was a futile endeavor. And I understand you have this great defense. And last year, you have to be so worried with the quarterbacks that it's like, if we can just not turn the ball over, we can try to win 14-13 every week. And we have to be conservative. So I understand it a little bit last year, even though I disagree, because who knows if you let Duck and Mason, if you let the reins off them a little bit more, maybe they would have had a little bit more chance for success. This year, I also understand being conservative to an extent because Ben is rusty. He has to get back into it. We saw how bad it was in the beginning of the Giants game, but I think it's done. I think we're done. I think the rust is over. I think the Claypool touchdown, some of the deep throws to Ebron, deep middle, the accuracy he's had to Juju out in the flats, the long touchdown to Deontay, training wheels should come off. So there's no reason to be conservative anymore. I'm just pretty damn sure we're still going to see it. So that's what makes me nervous from Mandy Fietner's perspective. From a Matt Canada perspective, there's some cool things happening. If Deontay Johnson doesn't fumble that reverse on the first play of the game, he had big time daylight. They had a couple really cool tunnel screens to Juju that we haven't really seen here in Pittsburgh. Throughout this sort of modern phase of the NFL, there's that one where Juju kind of fakes to the inside on screen and then goes back outside. He caught it, stiff-armed somebody into the seventh circle of hell and picks up a huge first down. So there's some cool creative play calling now where there's actually picks being set for receivers. There's completions that are engineered for Steelers players. We haven't seen that. Usually it's just Ben freestyling to the Killer Bees or whatever it was, and they had a lot of success. But they've never engineered enough easy completions. So I will say from a positive standpoint, I'm not seeing people talk enough about that. There are some cool things that are going on there. The problem is, you know, the teams like the Rams or the Saints or the Niners or the Patriots who do those cool screens, they're much more detail oriented and they succeed on those screens at a higher rate, where the Steelers are kind of boom or bust. They either lose 4 yards or gain 20. Fietner thing is worrisome. We need to keep an eye on it. Hopefully he gets more aggressive now that he's more comfortable with Ben being in there. And that's what I feel about philosophically. Do you want to talk about any of the other positions now that we've talked about Ben and the offensive line a little bit, as far as the offense goes?
Yeah, I wanted to talk about the receivers, and I think we've mentioned them. They have all the potential of the world, but they drop 6 passes collectively.
Yeah. It's the Deontay Johnson syndrome we talked about before. It's either the best play you've ever seen or the worst drop. That, once again, I really think it's a matter of them playing in a passing offense. It was such a weird year last year where you just kind of had to hold on and play defense. And now it's, hey, this is boom, boom, boom. Ben's going to be throwing the ball to you. You're going to have a lot of opportunities. And they're still young, so they're going to grow with that. I think, so obviously Deontay stands out a lot. Like when you see him at his peak, I mean, pick a play, right? Touchdown's great. The punt return touchdown that got called back for a phantom flop by none other than Nick Vinette on the he's the flopper on Denver. Punt return's unbelievable. The safety punt return was unbelievable. He had plenty of catches in the flat where he juked 3 guys and then got a first down. I mean, his upside is incredible. Let's just hope that he can get rid of, I don't know if he's drinking coffee before the game or maybe doing cocaine, because he's a little bit too jittery when he's out there. He just needs to go ahead and settle down. And it looks like his ceiling is what we all think it is. The Claypool thing, I mean, say no more. The guy makes a glorious special teams tackle on the first play of the game. The incredible touchdown, which, by the way, was so encouraging to us, because we know what Claypool's potential is when you look at his measurables and what Ben has been able to do with the deep speed downfield guys, whether it's Mike Wallace, Martavis Bryant, even Sammy Coates had a day in the sun there. Like, if you're a guy who can just run straight, Ben is the quarterback for you. It's either Ben or Russell Wilson. Those guys are going to turn you into a star. But we never saw Claypool really do that in college. He didn't have a quarterback who could throw the ball downfield. So you saw Claypool with back shoulder catches, end zone stuff, and crossers. You think, like, he should be able to run past guys. He has the measurables. We just haven't seen it. Well, we saw it against a 4-4 guy over there in Denver. So that's big for him. And then I think people are starting to get a little bit more of an appreciation for Juju, because his details are incredible. His run after the catch is phenomenal. He's like a running back with the ball in his hands. He's bruising guys, and he's very detailed in his route running and where he is and with the solid hands and everything like that. So I think that Juju's put together two really great weeks in a row. He really reminds me a lot of Hines Ward in a lot of ways. It's like, no, he's not going to be AB. He's not going to be DeAndre Hopkins, but wouldn't you take Hines Ward as a number one receiver?
Yeah, I'd like to see how many yards after catch Juju has, because you're right. I mean, the guy fights. I see that in James Washington. And the same thing with Deontay Johnson. I mean, the guy fights, but Juju just looks like he's just built like a truck.
Yeah, it's legitimately hard to bring him down. I mean, he's so strong, and he's a natural football player. He knows how to run with the ball. And then, of course, you know, we could talk about Deontay all day long, but he's got that thing. He's got the AB Dante Hall. Maybe not the Tyreek Hill speed, of course, but the quickness, the start-stop is absolutely unbelievable. It's just in slow motion for him. I mean, especially when you watch the safety punt return. So, yeah, that's what I think. And then just to close it up with the running backs, James Conner looked really good. I mean, oh my gosh, how do you not take that last play to the house? He ran out of gas at the end there, but career-long run, good blocking by the offensive line. But if you rewatch it, it was a nice run by Conner, and it just shows you, like, Benny Snell is very similar to James Conner, and he can do a lot of things that he seems like neither one of them has a real sex appeal to their game, but Conner just is a little bit more explosive. He's a little bit more complete of a guy. Hopefully Benny keeps improving behind him and learns how to hold on to the football, because that's a problem already with him and Deontay. But yeah, Conner looked good yesterday, and I kind of have no further comments on the running backs. I'm glad that the ankle didn't seem to be a serious issue.
I guess the only other thing to mention are the tight ends. Eric Ebron targeted 5 times. He had 3 receptions for 43 yards, a long of 21. I don't know. Deontay led all receivers with 13 targets. The next highest guy was Juju with 8. We clearly see a pattern here. I just and Vance basically is out of the game. He had 2 targets and he caught 1. Maybe that's to be expected. It looks like Ebron is just the number one target in tight ends. I really hope we take more advantage of him. I mean, he is a long guy.
Yeah, I think it's just a matter of Ben developing the chemistry with him. And I got nervous about that all offseason when when Ebron, who's such a just a likable, like fun guy, positive guy, very excited kind of all the time. I got a little nervous in the preseason when he's making all these comments and posts with him and Ben and commenting on NFL analysts' tweets about like how certain teams are using tight ends. Like, look how this is happening in the red zone. And he's commenting like, wait till you see us. And in the back of my mind, I know like, it's not going to be like that right away. You're not just going to get a plug in with Ben and it's just going to be this thing, but it can definitely develop. So I just hope that Ebron has the patience when he's not getting a bunch of touchdowns at first, you know, to hang in there. And I'll say this, what was it, like 1 catch the first week, and now he's got almost 50 yards the second week. That's a positive step in the right direction. So that looks good. And I agree. Hopefully they start learning how to use him, especially in the red zone.
You want to flip over to the defense? Cause and I'm just going to start with the negative, and let's end on the positive. The negative was what I saw as a lack of steam in the second half, either their aggressiveness sort of worked against their conditioning, and you can't imagine these guys aren't well conditioned, but it kind of looked like they were gassed in the second half. And here's the tail of the tape. In the first half, Denver was 1 for 8 on third down. In the second half, Denver was 4 for 7. They were 7 for 19 in passing in the first half, and they went 12 for 20 in the second. So they went from 37th percent success rate in the first half to 60%. And I think that was maybe more indicative of the secondary, although I don't think the front seven got the push in the second half that they did in the first.
Well, I agree with your point about them being a little bit gassed and maybe the offense going three and out every single drive as a result of run and screen calls needlessly. Maybe that has all something to do with getting gassed, huh? So people got to watch this game and look at it in context. The first play of the day, Drew Lock makes an Aaron Rodgers to Jordy Nelson-esque throw to Cortland Sutton on the sideline. And at that moment I said, oh man, this might be on. Cause I've been very curious along with everybody else about Drew Lock and Sutton. They show star potential and they made a play on Steven Nelson where you couldn't even really fault Nelson too much. I mean, it was bang, bang. That was bold. 15 yards, shoot it downfield right off the bat. They came out there aggressive. But after that first play, they couldn't get anything going. Locke couldn't complete a pass. So I think that when you rewatch the game circumstantially, Locke and the Denver offense were overwhelmed by the Steelers defense. And then when you put Driscoll in, yeah, he has a good game once every year for whoever it may be. The Bengals are now for the Denver Broncos. But I think that some of the defense tiring out is due to the offense playing scared. And they definitely can't do that against the Baltimores and the Kansas Cities of the league. But I don't know if there's anybody else I need to put a total highlight on as far as the defense goes. Just that maybe Alualu is really delivering, and whenever he's getting in the game, I think he had another sack, maybe even two. And the silver bullet, Mike Hilton, was the other big standout. Besides the obvious fact that TJ is going to win Defensive Player of the Year this year.
Well, Cam Sutton, I just wanted to. The aggravating thing about these penalties was Deontay Johnson's 81-yard touch, his punt return for a touchdown that was nullified by Cam Sutton. I'm sorry, I'm a little out of context here, but I was just looking at the negatives, and that it seemed to be a nitpicky block in the back that was called, but it was a sign of things to come on the special teams, right? With Johnson's ability to return the ball. And I always get nervous when they start going east to west and doing this sort of crazy. It seems like there's more of a chance to lose yardage, but he obviously stuck with it and found a hole.
Some guys can pull it off. It was like Antoine Randall. He could do that at the beginning of his career. And then after a while, if you lose a tenth of a second, you know, or a fraction of a second, you know, a hundredth of a second off of your 4-yard dash time, you can't do that anymore. You got to cut up field. But Deontay definitely falls into that category. You do just get nervous when he does it, because his ball security is so horrific. But I'm all for it. Like, make the plays. Look how often he makes them. It's incredible. Colquitt has been a little bit of an issue on the punting, so we'll see. When you get a 60-year-old punter, sometimes that stuff can happen. The Cam Sutton penalty, it wasn't a penalty. So you just – and honestly, there were quite a few pass interferences called on the Steelers this game that were just – they were not pass interference. So – you know, some people online are getting up in arms about it. There's a lot of ticky-tacky calls going against the Steelers. And there always seems to be this subgroup of reporters who just refuse to admit that referees ever have anything to do with a game. And of course they do. You're going to have some games where you're not going to get calls. I mean, I think to the Steelers 2 years ago when they played the Chargers and the refs gave them two free touchdowns, you know, when there was a false start on offense that they didn't call and the receiver ran a go route when everybody else on defense literally stood there. So Phillip Rivers throws to him uncovered and for some reason they don't call that. You know, there's games where you're not going to get the calls. You know, one or 2 weeks later that same year, the Saints with the ridiculous pass interferences on Joe Hayden. You're going to have some games where you get calls. Going against you, but the Steelers should have dominated in spite of those. They should have still won comfortably even with those bad calls. But it does help you to contextualize how well did the players play, how well did they execute. You can't just look at the final result or the box scores. Those penalties do have to do something, with what actually happened in the game.
Well, they really need to cut out those penalties.
Well, that's not the only thing that they got to cut out. You got to cut out some time in your day to cut the shrubberies. Thanks to Manscaped, they're going to have you looking like a brand new man, like a modern man. You want to be a Don Draper kind of man? You want to be a Tupac kind of man? You want to be a man's man? You want to be a king? Use Manscaped, all right? Have some damn pride. It's 2020. The time of nicking and cutting yourself while you are manscaping, you know, below the belt grooming, as it were, those days are gone because manscaping has the best scientists in the world pulled off of COVID research to make sure that these pieces of equipment are engineered so sleekly and so in such an impressive way that it is literally impossible to cut yourself or damage yourself. You can do trimming in the shower, so on and so forth. And it's not just about trimming. They have balms, anti-chafing cream. They got all kinds of stuff that you can use to take care of, you know, what you need to take care of as far as that goes. All right. So just use that code armchair. Use that code armchair at manscaped.com. You'll get 20% off and free shipping. 20% off and free shipping with the code armchair, manscaped.com.
I'll bet you're happy with that purchase.
Yeah, you'd be betting right. And I hope that you made that bet on betonline.ag. They got the best lines, the best props in the game. Is Ben going to get MVP this year? He's on pace to throw 40 touchdowns this year. I'll take that bet. Let's go put one of those in right now, Dad. But either way, if you report to betonline.ag, they got action on every single major sport, simulated action, in addition to hundreds of live casino games, poker tournaments, and the best props in the business, as I mentioned. So visit betonline.ag on your computer or mobile device and join now to receive your welcome bonus. Betonline.ag, your online wagering experts.
So next week, the Steelers take on the Houston Texans at home, having just come off a 33-16 drubbing at the hands of the Baltimore Ravens. The Texans come into Pittsburgh 0-2. What are your thoughts about that game?
I just feel bad for the Texans that they drew the Chiefs and the freaking Ravens in the first two games. I'm excited about some watt-on-watt action. And if by excited, I mean, like, please don't let Derek Watt block TJ. He's going to need some help. Or not TJ, JJ. So that's pretty cool. It is. It's going to be a big test. Listen, the Texans are like generally well coached team, and we're finally playing a superstar quarterback for the first time. So I'm glad that we got a couple weeks under our belt before having to go against one of these guys. They have a capable receiving core. Clearly, has taken a hit without Hopkins. I'm less nervous about them than I would be if Hopkins were playing. But the fact is, Deshaun Watson is going to slip out of some of these tackles. I mean, he's just going to. So the Steelers are going to have a test on their hands, but the Texans are not an overwhelmingly talented team. The Steelers are definitively a more talented team across the board than what the Texans are. You just have to watch out if you get yourself in a situation like you did with New York and Denver, where you're playing down to teams' levels, because someone like Deshaun, he's going to figure it out by the fourth quarter if you give him enough chances. I don't care who his receivers or his running back are. This is going to be the most potent team the Steelers have played yet. They're also going to be ravenous and complete because their season is essentially on the line. I mean, we know the stats, right? If you go 0-3, you're not making the playoffs. I mean, it happens once every 10, 20 years, it seems like. So they're going to get the Houston Texans' best effort. But it seems like the Steelers are going to be pretty healthy to the game. I just hope that Randy Feitner lets Ben cut it loose a little bit more, because I think that that's going to be the key to the game.
So I don't think we knew about this in time for last week's game, but obviously everybody knows by now Zach Banner is out for the season with a torn ACL. One of the saddest stories ever. I mean, this guy worked so hard, but you know what? I think Okorfor's story is pretty good too. I mean, he may not have been the social media maven that Zach was, but he stepped up and to fill the void, they brought up journeyman and former Steeler Gerald Hawkins.
So they got some depth solidifying there. Hopefully Wisniewski and DeCastro are able to come back sooner rather than later, and the Steelers can withstand this. But this is an injury crazy year without season. It just happens anytime you miss preseason. But I'm hoping that the Steelers, the fact that they just have a bunch of just athletic freaks all over the field, and the fact that their defense is always the aggressor and not the side of being aggressed upon, I think that hopefully that bodes well for them. And let's see if they can just take the top off a little bit more. I think that the touchdowns to Deontay and Claypool, I mean, those are Gage Ben touchdowns. I mean, the touchdowns against the Giants were nice, but when you're talking Ben Roethlisberger, you're talking one of the best deep ball throwers in history on the go route. And you're talking about one of the best guys when he breaks the pocket to make those touchdown throws. So those were vintage, classic Ben playmaking touchdowns. Hopefully that gets his confidence up. I think it will. And then if you take a little bit, I mean, they'd be had against the Texans secondary. So hopefully they do that.
So the Steelers are generally off on Monday or the day after a game. But my assumption is those receivers will be in front of the jugs machine at midnight tonight at 12:01. And they won't leave until Thursday at 12:01 a.m.
That's a great plan. I think that Deontay Johnson should maybe just carry around a football or like a baby or an egg or whatever you need to do just for the week. Because if he takes care of that, then he's got all pro written all over him.
Visit the website, SteelersOutpost.com. Check us out on Instagram at Steelers Outpost. Hit us up on Twitter at Steelers Outpost or shoot us an email at SteelersOutpost@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. Until next week, go Steelers.
Okay, bye-bye.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.